This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Howdy, this is Jim Brackmeyer of baseball broadcast fame. It's 3 p.m. and the Michael K. Show starts now on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Michael, from one legend to another, how's about we crack open a couple of pops and call a game together sometime?
Sounds good, Jim and Hank. And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, March 24th, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, with you. Now, we're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours, and the other 20, that's your responsibility. Right now, we are a radio-only vehicle because the Yankee game remains on. Yes, once that's over, they will join us, but we got to talk about Yankee baseball because Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg joined me for 3 innings on the Yankee-Blue Jay game, and I thought they did a wonderful job. I thought they sounded very, very comfortable. I will just tell you that Anthony Greek, who produces the simulcast on the Yes side, he said a lot of people in the office said, boy, Don has such a soothing baseball voice. I'd like to listen to him on a beach. And I answered Anthony back, well, he's available on Cameo. So there you have it. But, Don, you did 2.5 innings of the 3 innings of play-by-play. We tried to get you a home run.
I know.
There was a home run the half inning I did. Ryan Rucco had a home run in the first inning. And then the next batter after we left the air, Bo Bichette hits his second home run. The baseball gods were not on your side.
No, but you were so generous to offer me what you did because you didn't. There, first of all, when we first did this with Flip, there was never any conversation about me doing play-by-play. We were just going to just be together, and Michael was going to do the play-by-play. And then Michael said, if he's in a good mood, he'll give me a half inning. And I knew that he would be in a good mood and he would do that. But I had no idea that it would be more than that. And I thought that was tremendously generous of you. And it was a ball. I had so much fun doing it.
I'll give you a hot take. Don, you could do baseball. I enjoy you doing hockey, but the energy of hockey and baseball are so vastly different that I appreciated your voice quality. I didn't know that your voice quality would be so good for baseball, and it was terrific.
Now,
well, thank you.
Now, for those, you know, people go, well, what if Yes offered him a gig doing some Yankee games? Well, Don wouldn't do it. He's a Met fan. Well, pump the brakes, okay? Yeah. Don grew up a Devil fan. He's very comfortable in that Ranger booth.
Very
so
comfortable.
Wherever they are, I've taught him that. That's the one thing I think that has rubbed off. Wherever they offer you the money, you go. You can be a fan in another sport.
But it's so much fun. Play-by-play is so much fun, seriously. And I always wanted to do it my whole life, and it just never happened after college. And I ended up going the talk show route until the Ranger opportunity jumped into my lap, and I took advantage of that, and it's Michael, you know, it's so much fun because we all would love to play, but the closest thing to getting to play is to do play-by-play. And, Peter, it's right. It's very relaxing. Like hockey, you're at the edge of your seat. At any moment, something can happen, but there's, you know, a little relaxation to baseball where you kind of get in a nice groove, and it was fun, and it was to be with my boys and calling a game. That was a dream come true. That was tremendous.
Now, it was not without some problems, and of course the problems have to emanate with Peter. The first time we asked him a question in the top of the second inning, he's talking without a microphone. I mean, it was so brainless. It was embarrassing is what it was. I mean, did you think that you're such a great broadcaster that just the air would pick you up and carry you into the ears of others?
You know, sometimes I question whether you're in fact a bad guy, and then there are the moments when I know for sure that you are. I do 8 hours of broadcasting a day, and you actually believe that what happened was that I forgot to use a microphone. I just sat down and thought I could talk into the air of my room and it would work. No.
But you had earbuds in. That didn't work.
So let me explain, and you could believe it or not believe it.
I'm telling you I don't believe it.
The Yes team did a tremendous job. They had 7 different people in 7 different locations. They did an unbelievable job. We had an issue where I had no ability to hear the broadcast in my headset. So we messed with it for a while beforehand, could not get it. Then the game starts, and we decide it works with my AirPods. I was able to hear you guys on the Zoom on my AirPods. I was going to wear the headset anyway, but was concerned that the headset, if it was useless and just covering my AirPods, it would be stupid to do it for aesthetics and have you guys not hear me because it's blocking the sound. So I took off the headset. Then we start, and the AirPods, the microphone is not working, and in fact, the mic is working on my headset. I get blasted by Michael and Don, and I now look a total fool, but it's okay. I am not that dumb. It was simply a glitch that happened, and I'm fine to be the sacrificial lamb for what turned out to be, I thought, a really entertaining broadcast. I thought if you remove some of the delay issues that made it hard, it truly made the game. Don, it's what you and I always said. I thought it was a fun, and we covered the game seriously while also having laughs throughout the time we were there.
I mean, the Yes technical people are so top of the line, probably the best in the entire country. There's no one that told you, yeah, take the headset off. There's no way. There's no way that was ever said.
I can tell what happened. Is because I couldn't hear myself either. Like, I could hear you guys, but when I was talking into the microphone, I did not hear myself. They were hearing you through your Zoom, which you had to turn down when the game started. So you thought that the iPods were working. They weren't.
No, Don. I only heard you guys in my AirPods even throughout the whole game. I never heard you in my headset. I was using the headset mic
right. And
the AirPods for audio.
But when they thought your mic was working was when you were talking into the Zoom.
No, we're getting way too in the weeds here, but no, that's not what happened. They knew my mic was working. It's just that since I couldn't hear through the headset, it didn't make sense to do that.
Are you sure, Peter, that it wasn't vanity? Because that would be embarrassing.
No, it was the opposite. I thought that wearing the headset would have been for vanity and just to look like I'm a broadcaster, so I took it off. I'm like, no, if I'm using the AirPods, I'll just wear the AirPods. It's fine. And then, of course, you don't hear a word that I said. And it was a very awkward start, to say the least. But I thought we got into a groove. And, Don, you also know, I was also hearing you guys on a crazy delay and hearing myself on a crazy delay. And all things considered, I thought it turned out pretty good.
Let's hear when Peter didn't have his headset on. I think it's important to revisit it on the radio side. Here is when Peter did not have his headset on.
Peter, I know that you're the daddy of Bear. You're a dog. Have you ever carried Bear and fell down? I know you fall down a lot, but have you ever fallen down with Bear? All right, we are not hearing Peter. Peter has to put his headset on in order for us to hear him.
Yes.
He's working with earbuds, so...
He's being a television boy right now. Nobody cares what you look like. Wow. We need to hear you. That's the whole point of this thing.
This doesn't work.
Oh, there it does. It absolutely does work.
Oh, we hear you loud and clear.
Wow, that is tremendous.
Yeah.
Now, Peter, one of the big criticisms you have when you do games on TV, sometimes you can misjudge a fly ball, especially when you're doing it off the monitor. It's less of an excuse when it's in the ballpark, but sometimes there's a big swing and the ball doesn't travel that far. The misjudge monster got Peter. Here it is.
Let me guess, you have the audio for that.
Yeah. Well, I brought along a clip. Here it is.
That one's driven deep to right field. The judge is there in front of the track. He'll make the play for the first out.
It was just a light, oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord. I mean, when you invoke God's name, I mean, you think it's a long home run.
And he thought it was a home run, which means he was willing to jump your call.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you're right. That would have been.
See how inadvertent it could be, Peter? See how accidental it could happen? I don't think you had any intention of stepping on Michael's home run call, but that's what you were going to do.
There was
had it been
some,
a home run.
There was some Maloney steppage in the game between me and Don. Here it is.
So here we go with Don and Peter on Yankees baseball. And the first
so
pitch,
looking forward
Garcia.
To this, Michael, and thank you for the opportunity.
Right, just right on me.
Well, there was one
shot
that was
out of a cannon, Peter. That's what he was.
But there was one worse delay.
Than that. There was one where you guys went for, I think, a good 6 seconds of simultaneous talking. I laughed to myself.
And I think that the best line of all was from the great Meredith Marakovich. We showed a picture of Peter and Aaron Judge and Peter and Stanton. And, listen to Meredith.
You are a great broadcaster.
That's fine.
Though I'm not sure about your skills on the diamond.
Wow. She had said it looked like if Judge was standing next to an unathletic Jose Altuve.
And Peter took exception to the unathletic. Because Peter still is holding on to the dream.
I thought there were other things she could have said. I didn't look unathletic in the photo. I wasn't stumbling over myself. I was just standing. I can handle standing.
That's something that's easy, yes. 1-800-919-3776. We're going to allow you to review it as well. I will tell you this, and I mean, everybody knows I'm a yes man, but the technological advances and what our crew was able to do to put seven people on the air from different locations is just, it's mind-boggling the amount of heavy lifting that is. And there's going to be moments where there's delays that there's nothing that could be solved. There's delays when you're far away. You just hope that the delay is not as long as, you know, that it would affect the broadcast, but they're just tremendous. I mean, it's not done. Seven people on the air from different locations. It's not done. And Yes was able to pull it off today. And most importantly, the three of us getting a chance to do the three innings on the air helped the Make-A-Wish Foundation raise over $30,000, which means three wishes are going to be granted to kids that are struggling in health situations. And that makes it all worthwhile to me because that's what it was all about.
Absolutely. And the great job by everybody to do that. And it just shows you how close we are as a family, that we were able to get people to do that, and especially during this time, right, where money is not exactly available to a lot of people. And that was really heartwarming to see that.
All right. As the reviewers are calling in, Don, it must be asked. I think Peter also wants to know the answer to this. I let you get the play-by-play for 2.5 of the three innings. The one inning I did, and that was as a transitional inning.
Right.
I had a home run call. It was a Blue Jay home run, but it was a home run call. You did not get the home run call. Ryan got two, both by Bo Bichette. You didn't get it. So we need to know, what was your home run call going to be?
All right. I struggled with this all night because I was exhausted, but I was really anxious about it. I got to come up with something. All right. Now, do I do it straightforward professional? Or do I give it a little K feel? Because that was my biggest problem going in, guys, was that you wanted to give the audience what they wanted. And there's a lot of people that were watching specifically because they wanted the K show. So I don't know if I would have done it, if I would have had the guts to do it in the moment. But this is what I was hoping I would do. All right?
Okay.
Let's see if I get this down here. All right.
Here we go.
Thornton with the pitch. Long drive by Aaron Judge to left field. We know it's gone. Home run, Aaron Judge. Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
I like it. It makes me more upset that there was not a home run.
Oh, man.
I figure that's not really off a home run call, but I get to throw in one of my kind of rant drop champions.
We know!
Don, you know what else you could use there? I got to say, it may sound weird at first. I think you could use That's the Answer.
Yeah, I thought about that too. But it's got to be at, like, the right moment. Like, let's say the Yankees score after the Blue Jays had scored the previous inning. You know, something like that.
Or you could use We Know as a regular one. But if it's, like, completely gone off the bat, you could instantly start with a That's the Answer and then call it.
And if I wanted to be a homer announcer, when the other team hits a home run, I could do that. Look at this garbage.
You know, Ken Harrelson would have loved it. But, and we were scheduled to do just two innings, but the guys that run the network, John J. Filippelli, and then the president of the entire network, John Littner, were enjoying the first two innings and gave us a third. And I also want to thank Paul and Ryan. They were real good sports about it. You know, they were doing the game, and they stepped aside for three innings. And I thought Ryan was very pointed in his criticism when we did have him on during the three innings. I thought that was great. He showed a different side of Ryan.
Yeah.
Little edge.
And you knew that he really felt that.
Of course.
And for those that may have missed it, Ryan questioned the network for giving us the extra inning.
Yes.
Paul was like disrobing by the inning. Like he was, you know, he did the stand up where you saw like the tie, and then they went to him. The tie was loosened. If we had ended up doing more innings, I think he'd go back. His shirt would be unbuttoned. I don't think he had a problem at all giving up.
No, no. If you tell Paul you only have to do the first inning, okay, he'd be fine.
Do you think this is fair? A tweet. Rosenberg Radio had no business being on the broadcast. Made a mockery of the profession.
That's just somebody that doesn't like you, Peter.
I mean, Michael, you spent time crushing me technically. Okay, that's fine. Did I say anything during the broadcast that was inappropriate or a mockery of the profession?
Peter, let me break this to you, okay? I don't know if you realize this. There are some people that despise you.
Right. You're a very polarizing figure.
I mean, if you would have channeled Vince Scully today, that guy still was ready to send out that tweet. Last night, I mean, you guys stink because of Rosenberg. I mean, really, I don't even answer him back anymore. People either love you or hate you. You are not the gray guy. So the guy who said that, making a mockery of the broadcast, you know, you're probably going to get Mel Allen spinning in his grave, all of those beautiful things, they just don't like you, Peter. You could have been exemplary, which you weren't, but you could have been, and they would have said the same thing.
Right. It's the reverse of they had you at hello. You know, it's... There's nothing you can do to change that, Peter, so don't worry about it. You were great. I thought when I went upstairs and Nancy was watching, she liked the fact that it was so you, right, when you talk about the Instagram with the players and stuff. That was good.
Listen, I wasn't going to try to show up and all of a sudden be Mr. Serious Baseball. I don't think that would fit. But, Michael, I asked a couple of questions that I thought were pertinent and actual. You know, I'm not going to pretend to give the answers. I don't have it, but I'm sitting next to someone who does.
And I thought that I tailored some of the stuff I brought out for you. I thought you'd have a good time with the injuries.
Yeah, I don't know. You think that I enjoy talking about people being hurt. But, yeah, it worked also.
I was going to get to the one that was a player that actually had to go on the then DL because he ironed his shirt while it was on his body.
That's not what you want to do.
There's another guy that got to be taken out of the lineup because he fell asleep on the tanning bed and his face was burned.
I was disappointed there was no Clint Frazier today because he's literally maybe the only player with the only Yankee with a truly interesting Instagram account. He has like an obscene sneaker collection. He has a cat that yodels. Clint Frazier has a lot going on. We didn't get Clint Frazier.
By the way, up to date, up to the minute, this is what all of you out there have given to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The total is now up to $34,545.
Wow.
Our initial goal was $10,000, so we've exceeded that. Again, thank you. Let's take some phone calls. Let's see what you thought. Let's go to Chris in Leonardo. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing good, thanks. I just wanted to let you know I was watching from work today, and it was spectacular to see what you guys did out there. And I was even thinking during the broadcast that it'd be fun to see if baseball commentary would evolve into something like this, where you have the flair, the show, and some old school traditional baseball commentary. So you guys did a great job, and good job for Flip and letting you guys do it. Awesome job.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
And I think if we were – I mean, the only thing that I – if I was criticizing, and I'm not one of the three that was in the booth, you know, obviously there was steppage. If we were in the same booth next to each other, which is the way games are supposed to be done,
right,
I think it would have been flawless. I really do.
That was my biggest takeaway is that while it was a little frustrating dealing with the tech stuff, I could tell we have all the elements where it would be a lot of fun. Really solid.
Yeah, people really took to it. And the good news for the Yankees, they usually don't have to do that kind of thing because every game is important. The team's always competing for a championship. But if you were broadcasting a team that's on its way to losing 100 games, that's totally the way you want to do a broadcast.
I think baseball broadcasts should be more fun. They should be more fun. And I, you know, Troy, our producer, you know, he kind of turned it into today, and I wouldn't mind doing this more of this stuff during the regular season, sort of like what they do with TNT's NBA show. You know, he had the picture of me on a bodybuilder's body. I mean, that stuff is great. I think people like that.
Yeah. I know Yankee baseball, Serious Baseball, because they're always competing, but, and you know, when you're broadcasting, what does it end up being, 135 games on YES? Maybe 150?
150.
You know, there's going to be times where in a blowout game, you still want to keep the audience, you want to entertain them, and you know, there's always a fine line. There are people that love their baseball like church and want no humor in it whatsoever, but I think there's a lot of people that want to be entertained. And you look at the best broadcasters, Michael, you know, Kruk and Kipe are great, But I think the reason that they're historically great in San Francisco is because they think outside the box and they have some fun.
And who do people love on our broadcast? O'Neal. O'Neal's different. Who did they love when we were growing up? Phil Rizzuto. I mean, those guys were, I mean, Phil Rizzuto had unbelievable broadcasting chops, but he had fun. I mean, Gary, Ron, and Keith, they goof around in the booth all the time. I think that works. I really do. I think baseball needs to loosen up a little bit. It's not Absolutely. Church. It's not church. So maybe Peter will get hired full-time. You never know. 1-800-919-3776. We will let you take your shots, make your comments. You know the number. You know the deal. We'll talk the Knicks, the Nets, the whole deal. We've got Dan Orlovsky a little bit later on as well. But we'll continue to have some fun about our, together, the three of us, our Yankee broadcasting debut. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg join me for three innings on the Yankee-Blue Jay game. Don, it must be asked, what was your home run call going to be?
I struggled with this all night because I was exhausted, but I was really anxious about it. Like, I got to come up with something, all right? Now, do I do it straightforward professional, or do I give it a little K feel? Because that was my biggest problem going in, guys, was that you wanted to give the audience what they wanted, and there's a lot of people that were watching specifically because they wanted the K show. So I don't know if I would have done it, if I would have had the guts to do it in the moment, but this is what I was hoping I would do. Thornton with the pitch. Long drive by Aaron Judge to left field. We know it's gone. Home run, Aaron Judge. Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
I like it.
The Michael K show.
You are a great broadcaster.
That's fine.
Though I'm not sure about your skills on the diamond.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the Michael K. Show, everybody. Hour two of a four-hour TV and radio extravaganza. We are joined by Yes after the Yankees lost to the Blue Jays in their exhibition matchup from George M. Steinbrenner Field. And early in the game, innings 2, 3, and 4, the three of us got together and called a little Yankee baseball, which was a blast. We just spoke about it for the last 3 hours. Now we'll move forward and talk a little basketball. The Knicks and the Nets last night, to me, won two games that should not be dismissed as just any game. And I'm going to explain why. The Knicks ran the Wizards out of the garden last night. Out of the garden. It was embarrassing. It was non-competitive from the very beginning. Julius Randle could not miss a shot. In fact, he was hitting threes. The ball didn't touch the rim. It just feathered through the net. They were unstoppable. Now, some Knicks fans or basketball fans, well, what's the big deal? The Wizards stink. Well, here's the big deal. It wasn't more than a year ago that the Knicks stink, that the Knicks were the Wizards. And let's be honest, everybody. When we came into this season, were you sure that the Knicks wouldn't be where the Wizards are? So the Knicks outplayed the Wizards. They blew out a team that last year they would have had trouble beating. And, you know, the Wizards could beat they play them again tomorrow. They can come back and beat them. But the bottom line is the Knicks have now taken that step away from the terrible. They're not the terrible anymore. They're right in the middle. The next step is obviously to be very, very good. I don't know if they make a trade before the trade deadline. Not sure about that. But to me, beating the Wizards the way they did, when you take a look at the rosters of the two teams, the Wizards have two of the best three players on the floor. Think about it. Russell Westbrook, who had a terrible night, and Bradley Beal, and the Knicks, Julius Randle. Those are the three best players I'd say on the floor. Mm-hmm. And the Wizards didn't have a chance, Peter. They didn't have a chance. So do not dismiss what the Knicks did. 131-113. They got their 22nd win, passing last year's win total already. The job that Thibodeau has done is just remarkable because the talent is not that much different than last year.
I think if you're a Knicks fan, and you don't celebrate these little moments or at least really appreciate it, you're sort of setting yourself up for an unenjoyable season. Because this is what makes them different than the team last year. This is now a team that wins the games that they should. And they may not win all of the ones that are tough. We've seen that 15 straight times over the last few years, but a few times this year against Philadelphia. And it's frustrating, and obviously you want to take that next step. But if this, you're right, Michael. If this was the team of last year, They were the Wizards. Last night isn't some foregone conclusion.
But for anybody to have the opinion, well, it was only the Wizards, then what'd you even bother watching for? Because then there's nothing of value. You blew them out. Oh, that's only the Wizards. Those same people would have killed the Knicks if they had won that game in overtime. Like, how do you go to overtime with the Wizards? You're supposed to kill them. The Knicks did what they were supposed to do. So for somebody to just say, oh, it doesn't matter because it's only the Wizards, well, then I don't. Then you shouldn't even have watched the game because there was going to be nothing that was – no outcome was going to satisfy you.
I was very satisfied. I mean, I was watching that game. I couldn't believe the mismatch. I mean, because if you remember, it was a couple of days ago, the Wizards actually gave the Nets a fight.
The Wizards
beat
the Nets.
Out.
When did they beat the Nets? A month ago?
Oh, that was the Pistons, I think.
No.
The Pistons were the one that started this streak for the Nets.
No, I don't mean... I'll look it up.
Then that was definitely more than a month. I mean, they've had their little streaks where we say, you know, they're not going to trade Bradley Beal because they've turned the corner. Well, they got embarrassed yesterday. And the Knicks were the team that embarrassed them. So, good for the Knicks. Now, we move over to the Nets. Now, the Nets beat everybody. But when you go to Portland, Portland's a good team. Lillard's a great player. And you beat them when there's only one of the big three on the court. And that one is not at 100% because he suffered a neck injury in the previous game but wanted to play. This guy wants to play. That's what you learn about a guy when you see him on the team that you could watch every day. He loves basketball. He craves being on that court. Do you know that he has the highest minutes per game of any player in the NBA? And
Real
Steve
quick,
Nash... Michael,
just want to add, the Nets lost to the Wizards on January 3rd and January 31st.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
That's amazing, and the Knicks embarrassed them. And, getting back to Nash with Harden, he said, I know I've got to be careful with his minutes. And then he paused and said, but how do you take him off the court? And you don't. And he doesn't want to be taken off the court. He doesn't believe in load management. He just doesn't. He's not Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard is handled in a different way and must be handled that way. Kyrie has to be handled a certain way. KD has to be handled a certain way. The thing about Harden, just roll out the basketball and tell him to go play. He's running the team. He's the point guard. Everything works off him. He is unbelievable. Now, Charles Barkley was on with Greeny today, and you could hear Greeny's show from 10 to 12 every Monday through Friday. And his praise for Harden off the charts. Here's Barkley.
I know I'm going to probably get criticized for saying this. This guy might be the best basketball player in the world. I mean, he might be the best player in the world. I've always thought he was the best offensive player. He wasn't as great as Michael and Kobe. But I said a few years ago, and people laughed at me, he's the best offensive player I've ever seen. Mm. But right now, no disrespect to LeBron or Giannis or anybody, James Harden might be the best basketball player in the world, period.
Now, how about MVP? Barkley told Greeny that he feels tonight's Nets game against Utah might go a long way. Listen to this.
If he go into Utah and win tonight, that to me, like, if he don't get MVP after that, people are just being biased. Listen, he did not handle the situation well coming out of Houston. He quit on those Rockets. But you know what? Hey, he made a mistake. He apologized for it. But what he's doing in Brooklyn right now cannot be overlooked.
Listen, I essentially agree with him. He's playing at an MVP-type level. But isn't it naive, though, to say what he did in Houston was terrible, but he apologized? Well, okay, he apologized. It doesn't erase that he did it. It's got to be part of the MVP judgment, doesn't it?
Yeah, the apology certainly doesn't help the MVP judgment.
Well, you don't apologize unless you did something wrong, and he clearly did something wrong. That is a terrible mark against this season, the way he played himself or didn't play himself out of Houston. And as great as I think he is, and I've loved watching him, and I'm glad that the Nets got him and the move was the right move to make. I'd be shocked if he gets an MVP after the way he played himself out of Houston. You can't dismiss that. I don't care if he apologized. Still happened. Sorry doesn't fix the lamp. I mean, that's a terrible thing that he did. Terrible. He's a completely different player now. I mean, he's a real team guy. But that doesn't, you know, bode well that if things get rough, you're just going to bag it. But I had doubts about the Nets getting him. You guys heard it. You were on the show. I didn't know how he would fit. How would the three of them share the basketball? He's the reason that they are what they are. He's the reason that they're this great.
Well,
he's freed up Kyrie, and they've made up, Don, for the loss of Durant because of Harden.
That's why if what happened in Houston didn't happen.
He's the MVP.
He's easily the MVP because they've played so much basketball without not just one but two. So Utah's a really good team. That'd be amazing. Second of back-to-backs, no Kyrie, no KD. He's got a sore neck, goes out there and beats the Jazz. God, Michael, even after what he did in Houston, it'd be tough to ignore him for MVP if they win tonight.
Yeah, it's amazing what he's done. And it for them to go into Portland and beat them without Kyrie, just amazing. Just absolutely amazing. I love it. I really do love it. Let's take some phone calls. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. Let's go to Eric in Long Island. Eric, start it off.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hi, Eric.
Good, good. So just going back to the Knicks real quick. It's funny. You know, one of you guys had mentioned saying, you know, they're winning the game that they should win, right? The difference between the Knicks this year and last year is the fact that they even have a game where you can say they should win this game. You know,
yep.
Not one game last year would they have been in and you say, you know, they should really win this game. And that's kind of making it fun that there's actually, you know, that it's clearly that they're better than they are last year because it's distinct. There wasn't one game last year at all where they weren't the underdog, I don't think. So it's been a fun year so far, and hopefully they could, you know, make the right decisions while at the same time, you know, maybe adding. But I don't want to, you know, get too far ahead, but it's been fun.
I'll tell you this. If you want to know why the Knicks are as good as they've been, and Mike Vaccaro had a great column in the Post about this, and I noticed it too. I don't know if Don and Peter watched a lot of the Knick game, but they were blowing the Wizards out. And the guy does not want to take his big guys off the floor. He put in Obi Toppin. I think Obi Toppin played 8 minutes. Yeah. Now, a blowout game is when you're going to get the kid some time. But if you don't play the right way, you're off the court. If he sees some kind of a lax defensive stand, he puts Julius Randle back in. He doesn't care the score. Now, a lot of people criticize him for that. But what he's doing is he's setting a culture. If you don't play well and you don't do what I want you to do, you don't play. It's a merit-based system. And I think that's changed the entire Knick outlook. I think the players respect it. He expects them to play the right way for 48 minutes, no matter what the score is.
But that said, there are times where you got to give guys a bit of a rest. Because if they're going to make the playoffs, Michael, they're going to do it having to play really tough defense. It's going to be exhausting playing basically every other night. So I get that. You want to be able to guys to earn their spots and punish them if they don't. But in a blowout like that, you've got to give guys more minutes than 8 minutes. You can't have the big guys out there too long because it might come at the expense of a game that you really could win or should win and don't because these guys are exhausted.
It's funny. He just doesn't want to have bad habits.
And I know.
The MSG, the director of the MSG broadcast, Howie Singer, kept showing Julius Randle having this long talk in the last couple of minutes of the game with Obi Toppin. Because you got to talk a kid down. This is a guy who was the NCAA Player of the Year last year. He's not getting any daylight on the Knicks. Because it's more important for Thibodeau and the Knicks to have this team make the playoffs. And right now he doesn't think putting Obi Toppin in there is going to allow them to make the playoffs. So he's always teaching. He's always grinding. He's a different coach. He really is. Let's go to Brandon in Minnesota. Brandon. Oh, we lost him.
Brandon.
That was my fault. Brandon, please call back. I hit the wrong button.
Oh, my God.
I'm a hack. I should be ashamed. And if it was up to me, I'd take the rest of the show off, what I just did.
That was just karma.
Karma, why?
The attacks.
Attacks on who?
The lies.
Thibodeau would have benched you for that.
And he should have.
Poor guy's been on hold.
Let's go to Ed.
Takes time out of his busy day to join us.
Go to Ed in Staten Island.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. Mike, I just want to talk about the Knicks real quick. I actually was at the game yesterday, and first off, I enjoyed it. I mean, you know, with a little bit less fans, you know, it seems a little bit more exciting. You know, you could interact with the players a little bit more to hear you on the court. But aside from that, I love watching them this year. I think they're the team in New York to watch. I know everybody's talking about the Nets. Obviously, they got a superstar team, but it's good to see, you know, Tibbs, you know, bring the guys around, and, you know, they're, you know, he's making them develop. You know, Randall is unbelievable. Definitely the most improved player in the league right now. And like I said, I just enjoy them. I think they're the team to watch in New York, and I wouldn't be surprised if they make a run in the playoffs.
I got to ask you, because I have not been to a Knicks game in the present configuration. So let me ask you, Ed, when you're sitting in the stands, I don't know where your seat was, can you hear the players talking clearly on the court?
Oh, yes. You could hear them very, very loud and clear. And we were giving Russell Westbrook a little, you know, heckling him a little bit. And it was fun. And, you know, I feel that he had a bad game just because we were heckling him so bad.
All right. Well, good. I mean, I mean, your basic premise that they're the show in town, I have to vigorously disagree. The Nets are the show in the NBA. The Knicks are fun to watch, but the Nets are the show.
But the way the Knicks are doing it is so quintessential New York. We've talked about it all the time, right, Michael? Even with the Yankees, they love the homegrown guys. And then the guys that they get via trade or free agency, they give a hard time to, right? Same thing with the Rangers. They love Leach. They love Richter. Because those are the guys that came up within the organization. Those are the get forever guys, even more than Messier, because they were there from the beginning. And this is what this Knicks team is about. They're winning pretty much, even though Randall came from the Lakers, with a bunch of young guys that they drafted, bringing them up through the system. And that New York loves that. They eat that up. So, yeah, I don't think a neutral fan is going to pick the Knicks over the Nets. But Knicks fans are just loving this team right now. Love it.
And they should. They're fun to watch. Let's go to Billy in Brooklyn. Billy.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Just wanted to piggyback on what the other gentleman said, more regarding Randall. I'm wondering why people aren't giving him more consideration as an MVP candidate. I'm not really saying that he should win it, but, I mean, the numbers that he's putting up, if you take him away from that team – they're definitely not a playoff team. I know you got to give a lot of credit to the coach, but I mean, man, he's playing out of his mind right now. And I think people should be talking about him being the MVP. What do you guys think about that?
He's going to be in the top 10, but I don't think he's the MVP.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an incredibly improved player and he's had an unbelievable year. He's an all-star, but I mean, for a team that's 500, you're really going to be an MVP. Even with Harden's misadventures in Houston, he's meant much more to the Nets and what the Nets are.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Julius, but I don't think he's the MVP of the league.
Well, not when you have so many candidates that are up higher. I mean, it's still, for everything that Randall has done, I think when it's all said and done, this is probably a team that's going to have to play in the play-in. I don't think they're going to get the sixth seed. Now, if they do, then maybe there's more consideration, but it's still going to be a team that's going to be more at the bottom of the conference as far as playoff teams than at the top. So really, it would be Harden, obviously, if it didn't would happen in Houston, but you're going to have to look at teams that are finishing 10, 20 games above 500, easily making the playoffs. For everything Randall has done, and it's been tremendous, we're talking about a 500 team in a very weak Eastern Conference. The bottom of this conference is putrid.
It is, and you know what? You might be able to eliminate Toronto as a,
you
as
have
a
to.
Contender. I mean, if they trade Lowry...
Well, that means they're acknowledging this is not a thing.
But even
right.
with them, no, I mean, have they lost now in a row?
Yeah, it was 8 the last time I checked. Did they
it
lose
is
last
nine.
Night?
It 9 is 9.
Now, and obviously playing in Tampa has killed them. So every game is a road game. I don't know what they're doing attendance-wise. I know Florida's letting people in the building. But obviously they're just people who want to see basketball. There's no Raptor fans in Tampa, you wouldn't think. People aren't traveling to Tampa to see them. So you're literally playing all 72 year games on the road. That's going to kill you.
I didn't think it was going to be a problem, and I think it is. I mean, when you're not in a home, I don't know if they're living in hotels or they rented condos. That you're on the road all year,
Michael. I think it's going to kill the Blue Jays.
I think it's going to really hurt them. Yep, it's going to really hurt them.
You know, and I brought up on the air that Shapiro thinks that maybe July 1st But they're going to need the border to change, the quarantine of crossing the border.
Yep.
And everything was looking great, and now two Montreal Canadiens contracted COVID-19, so they had their post-post game the rest of the week. That's the first time Canada had a postponement because of COVID-19. So they're afraid that maybe they're going through another wave up there. So if they keep that border closed, then they might play in Dunedin the entire season.
Yeah, and that will hurt. I mean, that will hurt. I mean, Dunedin's a lovely city, and it's about an hour's drive away from Tampa and close to Clearwater. But it's a minor league ballpark. It's going to be tough on the players. Yeah. I know playing in Buffalo, they still made the playoffs last year, but that's a tough go of it. Last year, every game for them was a road game. That's a grind, man, especially now it's 162 games. Last year it was 60, so they spent 30 games in Buffalo. If they don't get back to Toronto, that's going to really submarine a very good team.
You know, and he's saying July 1st, which is optimistic. You know, we had Gary Bettman on last week, Michael. You know, the NHL is going to have to pause after their second round.
Right.
Because then the conference final means that the Toronto division's winner is going to either have to come to the United States or stay in Canada, and the other three teams have to go up to Canada to play in a neutral site in a bubble. They're going to have to wait. What's the quarantine now? Is it down to 10 days or is it still 14?
I think it's still 14.
They're going to have to wait 2 weeks. Do you think this will be over by June where they're going to open up the border?
I mean, we could hope, but that's not the way I would bet.
March is almost over.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet that way. Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. We'll take more phone calls when we come back. I'm going to depress Peter just a little bit. I got something to depress him.
Nice.
And I forgot.
Right.
I actually forgot. So
there you go.
This will be a pickup before I make him a little sad. Right now, most importantly, it's time for Drop Madness.
Drop Madness on the K Show, brought to you by Wendy's, where quality is our recipe. Wendy's, we got you. Guess what, guys? It's time for the second round. You ready?
Yes. Yeah.
The Michael region, we have the one seed.
Don plowed his entire neighborhood yesterday.
Up against the nine.
I'll scream over you, too.
I can't imagine that's close.
No, that's tough.
You think it is?
Yeah, that's not an easy one.
No, I think the one cruises. But in the Peter region, the big one seed. Derrick Henry and the Purple Birds. The Ravens against Derrick Henry and the Tennessee. Up against the eight seed.
If the most you could give is $5 for a movie.
I'm sorry.
What was that?
The Don region, we see the most dangerous number one seed. The overall number one seed in the tournament in action.
You just love Tiger. Sniff him. Sniff him dead.
Up against the eight seed.
Buccaneers travel to Carolina to take on the Christian McCafferlessly.
Try it again.
Let's do Christian McCafferlessly.
I love that at the second time you just do it again. You just power right through the second
one. I was clearly told to try again.
like you would tell your kids, try again.
Lastly, guys, the matchup of the day. It's Andrew versus Andrew in the Nether region, the one seed.
Oh. I said already, Don, it was embarrassing.
That could win the tournament, I think.
I really love it.
I'm so strong with that.
Up against the eight seed. Were you fully in the nude when Tobias Harris hit that shot?
Oh, man, was I.
No shot.
It's a great drop, but it's got no shot.
Yeah, I imagine we're going to see a lot of ones advancing today. Go vote on Twitter, TMKSESPN on Twitter. Thank you, Wendy's.
You know what that means?
What's that?
That he got the one seeds right if they all roll.
Yeah, it's chalk day.
So give him some compliments there.
Well, let's see if it's chalk day, but I think it is.
All right, we'll see. And then I'll depress Peter when we get back, take more phone calls. It's Kay LaGreca Rosenberg and you right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Michael K. Show.
The Knicks outplayed the Wizards. They blew out a team that last year they would have had trouble beating, and the Knicks have now taken that step away from the terrible. They're right in the middle. The next step is obviously to be very, very good. I don't know if they make a trade before the trade deadline, but to me, beating the Wizards the way they did, when you take a look at the rosters of the two teams, the Wizards have two of the best three players on the floor. Russell Westbrook, who had a terrible night, and Bradley Beal, and the Knicks, Julius Randle. And the Wizards didn't have a chance, so do not dismiss what the Knicks did. 131-130. They got their 22nd win, passing last year's win total already. The job that Thibodeau has done is just remarkable because the talent is not that much different than last year.
The Michael K. Show.
If it was up to me, I'd take the rest of the show off.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. Voting continues on Drop Madness at TMKS ESPN on Twitter. Major League Baseball rankings done by ESPN, they are out. And it's going to cause a little bit of an argument amongst New York baseball fans. Let me give you the top 10, everybody, if you will.
Okay.
All right, who's the top player in baseball?
Trout.
Mike Trout.
Mike Trout's number one. All right, number two?
Mookie Betts.
Very good. Number three?
Are these all position players?
Number three is a position player.
Come on, Don. Third best player in baseball. Yeah, I know you did, but what do you expect me to do here?
Benny Agbayani.
Nope.
Too soon for Tatis?
Too soon. But not too soon for Juan Soto.
Wow.
Nice.
Number four, Ronald Acuna Jr.
Okay.
Number five is Gerrit Cole. And number six is Jacob DeGrom. Now, help me out here.
All right.
I mean, from birth, I'm a Yankee boy, and I think that Gerrit Cole is one of the best free agent signings that they're going to make. He has not disappointed at all so far in every aspect. But Jacob DeGrom has won two Cy Young Awards. His velocity has increased each of the last 5 years. How do you, with good conscience, rate Cole ahead of Jacob DeGrom?
I don't get that.
Now, last year, Cole was ranked second, and DeGrom was ranked third. And this was coming off two straight Cy Youngs. How? I mean, what would the thinking be?
So is there any analytic that Cole's got him beat that it's definite that he's got to be ahead of him?
I don't see one. Now, he had a good year last year, 7-3, 2.84, 94 strikeouts, 7. And nobody's knocking Gerrit Cole. He's one of the top players in baseball. But to rank him ahead of DeGrom almost seems to me, I'm not saying that they're doing this, like a troll job to get people to debate, because I don't know how you do that.
I'm just going to see the war, since everybody really pays attention to that. So Cole's WAR last year was 2.2. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That seems the one that they want to pay attention to.
That's what they like.
Right? That's what they put everything on that. And Jacob's WAR last year was 2.6. Come on.
So what was Gerrit?
2.2. Last year, Jacobs was 2.6. So what is it? What is it about Cole that over the last 2 years clearly makes him better than DeGrom? Not that much better, but, you know, still.
Very odd.
2, 3, 5, 6. So the two straight years, and the year before when they had DeGrom, 3 was coming off of Cy Young.
I mean, maybe they're looking at it this way. A friend of mine just texted me with this. Maybe they're looking at it that Gerrit Cole has to face a lineup with a DH and Jacob deGrom doesn't. But the previous year when he was listed above, that was him. Yeah, he was still in the American League. I don't know. I mean, you can only face the lineup that's put in front of you.
So there's no way that a National League pitcher can be better than an American League pitcher.
I mean, Jacob deGrom is
when Cole was in the National League, he wasn't nearly as good as he's been since he went to the Astros and they increased his spin rate.
Mm-hmm.
So earned run average was 2.38 for deGrom, 2.84 for Cole. Right. You know, so you can adjust that to the different leagues, but it's still a pretty big difference. It's almost a half run difference.
Yeah, it doesn't quite ring true to me. Number 7 on the list is Freddie Freeman. Number 8 is Tatis. Number 9 is Christian Yelich. Shows you that they're not putting that much emphasis on 2020 because Christian Yelich had a terrible 2020. Although last year he was ranked 4th, so they did drop him 5 spots. Francisco Lindor, 10. So the Nets have 2 of the top 10 players. Nolan Arenado is 11. Cody Bellinger is 12. Alex Bregman is 13. Shane Bieber is 14. Cy Young Award winner with the Indians. Anthony Rendon of the Angels, 15. Trevor Bauer, 16. Jose Ramirez of the Indians, 17. Walker Buehler, 18. DJ LeMahieu is 19. Manny Machado, 20. Max Scherzer, 21. Corey Seager, 22. Trevor Story, 23. Aaron Judge, 24. And Bryce Harper's 25.
And, you know, now I'd have to look, Michael, but with pitchers never going over 6 innings anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you face a pitcher now on average per game?
I mean, if it's 3 times, it's a lot.
Yeah, 3 times is a bit much. So facing a pitcher, it's probably on average less than 2. It's probably like 1.8 or 9 or something. Because, again, between pitchers being ineffective by not wanting to go 3 times through the order, you know, some of these pitchers are gone after 5 innings and might only get, depending on how well, you know, you're pitching, might not get more than, definitely not more than 2.
Right.
So is that big of a difference?
Yeah, I don't agree with this. And again, this is no disrespect to Gerrit Cole. It's just total respect to Jacob deGrom. It seems almost like trolling. Well, we'll get attention with this if we put this guy who's won 2 Cy Young Awards.
And by the way, I'm good with the troll, but do it the other way so you're at least right.
No, but then it wouldn't be a troll.
Well, but still,
most people would agree that DeGrom should be ahead of him.
But having one place ahead of the other is inherently a fun little New York conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But at least do it the right way. Yeah, you're right. It's a bigger troll to put Cole first, but you still would have had some back and forth between Yankees and Mets fans. But this is just false. But guess what? DeGrom doesn't care.
No, I don't think Cole cares either.
Well, I don't think any. I mean, but they keep scoring away. That's
but
what makes
them
great.
But DeGrom at this point, I think, has to have accepted, if he's happy. I know nothing about Jacob DeGrom's life. If he's happy with his career, he's accepted that he is an animal, and while he gets, you know, the respect he deserves, he doesn't get the wins he deserves. He's been on a team that's just been meh for the last few years. And this is just another thing. He goes out there and does what he does. He's an absolutely dominant player. Hopefully this year they've put something around him that can finally make it feel like it translates into success.
This portion of the Michael K Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Picker designed the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Let's go to the phones. Mark in Staten Island. He has a theory on why Cole's ahead of DeGrom. Mark, tell us.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing?
Good. Good job on the game today, especially Don. You did a good play-by-play. It was real good.
Thank you, Mark.
No problem. I was thinking, Mike, that maybe they're thinking that Cole's going to have a better season because he's in a worse division. I mean, I'm a big Yankee fan, and I'd rather have DeGrom on my team. But, you know, the NL East is probably the best division in baseball up and down, and maybe Cole's going to feast off the AL East in their weak lineups.
Well, I mean, I like the way you're thinking. The Blue Jay lineup is not weak at all, so I think they're going to be a little problematic. But I don't think they're projecting. They're saying who's the best player right now.
Right.
So that's from their body of work. They're not predicting who's going to be the best player. Because Mike Trout didn't have a great year last year. He's still ranked number one. I mean, it's his body of work. So who's the better pick? If you had a game that had to be won for your life, who would you choose to pitch it? That's how I always judge. I don't look at the numbers that much. Jacob DeGrom is filthy. And so is Cole. Again, this sounds like we're knocking Cole. We're not. But Jacob DeGrom has been better.
But two straight years. Now, last year there was a lot of you faced the Marlins or were the same team because you were stuck in your own division. But you take a look at what DeGrom's going to have to go up against and what he has gone up against. Like just last year. I mean, the Marlins were supposed to be god-awful. They ended up being a playoff team. Braves are a really good team. I mean, the Phillies and the Nationals were 500, but they didn't have a Baltimore team. Or the Red Sox were terrible last year. Now, I don't know how many times Cole faced all those teams, you know, as opposed to what he would have done in a normal year. But I would think that even though he faces a pitcher, which is an advantage, I think DeGrom's got to face tougher teams in his division than Cole had to face in his division last year.
Yeah, it's odd. This portion of the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Picker designed the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. Let's go to Eric in Queens. Eric.
Hey, Michael. What's going on?
How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well. So I'm a huge, huge Mets fan. I've been on the show a couple of times. I just, according to what you said, I obviously love DeGrom and how his velocity is getting better is pretty ridiculous. It's insane to look at. But you said they had Soto ranked 3, Acuna ranked 4, and Freeman ranked 7. Like,
right.
That's who DeGrom is facing every day. Also,
good point.
His division is also
well said.
Incredible. And I understand that, like, Cole was in the AL, but those are three. I guess, were they in the division with Trout, I guess, and Mookie Betts, he didn't face him. He wasn't a Yankee yet. But, I mean, I see no argument for Cole being better than him. DeGrom's velocity is caught up to his. I don't get it.
It doesn't make sense, Eric. I mean, that's why we even brought up, we're not trying to troll a fake argument, but it just doesn't seem, I mean, we're trying to get Jeff Passan on tomorrow. And maybe he has some insight into why they would rank one guy ahead of the next, when it would just have been easier to have the guy that, you know, has won 2 Cy Young Awards, just put
right.
him a nudge ahead of Cole.
But they
decided
done it,
not to do it.
You've done it 2 straight years. So clearly whoever's making this list believes that Cole's a better pitcher than DeGrom. I'd like to know what stat they're looking at when the war is way in favor. The only things that I saw briefly looking at it, I think the whip was a tick better for Cole.
Not last year, the same whip.
And he pitched 5 more innings, which is negligible, right?
And it can't be about wins and losses.
And no, it
shouldn't
can't
be that.
But you know what it can be, though? Whose defense is better?
The Yankees.
Right. So you don't think that hurts DeGrom as far as other statistics that don't go down as errors, but because the range was not great up the middle, not a great defensive team, the trouble he had to work around because of that? And how many times, Michael, was he pitching in high-leverage situations where the only run the Mets had was probably an RBI double by him?
Right.
I mean, these are the – so that's why I looked at it, Peter, like, all right, what analytic, dweeby, nerdy thing are they looking at that we don't see? But the war is always the king of that, and he crushed him in war.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, it's the Yankees are sexier.
But he's
coming from a sexy team. He's on a sexy team now, but it doesn't. DeGrom has been the best pitcher in baseball for 3 years.
Let's go to Omar in East Brunswick.
Hey guys, just want to say I actually ditched class today to watch you guys at 1, so it was awesome.
Oh, cool!
Like, I went back later on, but yeah, it was so awesome. You guys, like, it was. Never would have tuned in. Great experience, though. Loved it. Loved every second of it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So I just, like, with this list, I don't understand. And like Don said, too, this is the same guy that ranked Cole ahead of DeGrom last year also. So, like, it would be good if you guys were to get his insight because, like, it just makes no sense. I mean, like,
I'm a big Met fan, and I'm trying to come at it from a rational side, not from like, oh, DeGrom is obviously better than him, even though like his numbers will say it. But I mean, DeGrom has also gotten better every single year, and also he hasn't been put in the best situations like Cole has, because, you know, I mean, right now you can say this is probably the best situation DeGrom has been in his career. Probably you can say this is the best defense he has. And that's not even saying a lot, and that's still not the kind of defense Cole has. So, yeah, I think those numbers will be skewed. But, I mean, I just think overall DeGrom is such a better pitcher, and he's so dominant, man. And I love that guy. And I just don't understand this list. I mean, it just makes no sense, and I appreciate you guys bringing it up. But to me it makes no sense. I mean, I'm sure everybody in baseball will take DeGrom over Cole also.
Well, I mean, let's not make Cole out to be, you know, some below average pitcher. He's great. You'd want either one on your team.
Right.
We're saying, you know, we're really slicing it down to a, you know, a thin onion like layer. DeGrom should be ahead of Garrett. And Garrett wouldn't argue about it. But
yeah.
you know, you talk about the nerdy numbers crunchers. That's why you can't look at the defense and you can't look at the one loss record of the team. You have to look beyond the numbers. And all of the things beyond the numbers will tell you that Jacob DeGrom is better.
Right. I'm just wondering, because when you make lists like this, there are certain little catchy stats that really exaggerate sometimes a player's worth, in my eyes anyway. But, again, let's not make it out to where Cole was third and Jacob DeGrom was 20th. I mean, yeah, they're right there. But I just find it interesting. Two straight years? So, clearly, they believe, putting this list together, that Cole's the better pitcher. And I need to know what stat they're looking at.
Well, Jeff Passan will tell us tomorrow, hopefully. Let's go to Nathan in Brooklyn. Nathan.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I was wondering, you were talking about that the MLB is going to be checking in on players for doctoring balls. Do you think Garrett Cole would be affected by it?
You know what? There's always rumors about the Astro pitchers, because, you know, working with Brent Strom and their analytics department, they become better pitchers. I mean, like Justin Verlander was on the way down, and then he found another gear. But remember when Mike Fiers turned in the Astros, that they were cheating. He could have absolutely have said that the pitchers were cheating as well, since he gave it up, and he never did. Maybe they have the secret sauce and they're doing something that nobody knows what they're doing, because Garrett Cole was a good pitcher with the Pirates. He took an exponential jump with the Astros, and when he's away from the Astros, you know what? He had a great first year with the Yankees last year. So why wouldn't Mike Fiers have given up that they were cheating with the pitchers too? I mean, he gave up everything they were cheating with the hitters. I don't know. I mean, so it doesn't seem like anybody is talking about it. I mean, there are pitchers that have left them. You know, Charlie Morton left them. Did he say anything? Did he give up any secrets? I mean, maybe you could say, well, why would they give up secrets? They're still doing it. Nobody's ever been caught. All we know is that their spin rate improves, but nobody's ever been caught doing anything wrong.
There's something to look out for, and it'll be interesting to see what pitchers drop off if they – you know, stop doing it, or whether any of these guys actually get caught. Because I'm a little dubious, really, how this is going to be executed by Major League Baseball.
Let's go to Chris in Yonkers. Chris.
Hello?
Hello, Chris.
Hello.
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great show today at the Yankee game. Awesome
Thank
work.
You.
Thank you so much.
The reason why I'm calling is I played baseball for St. John's. I was a pitcher. And I kind of disagree with your little debate over Garrett Cole and DeGrom.
Okay.
If I could explain.
All right.
If you look at the numbers, okay, yeah, they're comparable. But you got to remember, DeGrom gets to strike out two pitchers a game. So his strikeout total will be higher. Garrett Cole pitches at Yankee Stadium with the short porch. He's a right-handed pitcher. I mean, his ERA is 2.84 with Gary Sanchez as his catcher. I mean, come on, guys.
Well, I mean, Jacob DeGrom didn't have Johnny Bench behind the plate last year. He had Wilson Ramos.
Listen, it as far as calling the game and knowing the hitters, I definitely wouldn't want to throw to Gary Sanchez.
Well, see, I disagree. Gary Sanchez calls the game just fine. It's pass balls and blocking pitches in the dirt. That's what you have a problem with. So, I mean, listen, I don't think it's based on strikeouts. It just it can't be based on strikeouts. That would be a dumb thing to base this on. And also, Jacob DeGrom strikes out a lot of people, and Cole strikes out a lot of people. It's almost even. And they had him ranked, you could say, the short porch in right field. Last year they had Cole ranked ahead of DeGrom, and DeGrom was coming off his second straight Cy Young.
Michael, what do people in baseball think about when, you know, people outside of the highest level of the sport talk about things seriously, like how a catcher calls a game?
They know exactly what's going on. Nobody has ever – I mean, people used to complain about Mike Piazza. He had a terrible arm. You could run on him. Al Leiter told me he was great on pitches in dirt and called a great game. So I don't think that all of us that don't have all that information can tell you whether a guy's good or bad. Gary's been bad at receiving the ball, not calling the game.
Right. Like, listen, if you're on the outside and you see a catcher flub, like literally blatantly, you know, and Gary's had those issues too, Michael, you talked about the pass balls. Fine. Anyone can spot that and go, that's a problem. When non-players get too in the weeds on things like that, it's so annoying. I can't even imagine as a player how annoying it is to hear, but stop.
Now, also, like, I mean, the way he Wilson Ramos is not a good catcher.
Listen, the only thing that makes any sense is what you said about the leagues, that things are a little bit more even when you consider that he gets maybe two more strikeouts a game because he strikes out a pitcher. And the ballpark size. Even Citi Field moving the fences in is not, you know, Yankee Stadium. It's not having to pitch at Fenway Park. You know, it's not Camden Yards. There's a lot of launching pads that Cole's had to pitch through last year as opposed to DeGrom. But when the stats really aren't that close.
No.
When you got a war of 2.8 to 2.4, or is it, no, 2.2 to 2.6, that's pretty significant. Now, doesn't war factor all that in?
You would think so. We're going to take a brief timeout. We've got Dan Orlovsky coming up as we shift gears, and we'll talk about the Jets' decision that they have to make. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Our good buddy Dan Orlovsky joins us in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.